It's got a death curse.
And all of you will be like me. And then he'll lock you up in a sewer.
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Welcome back to another episode of Horror 101. I am your host, Cash Wampum. Our first show of 2013, and we got a treat for you. If you're a longtime listener, you know that I like to close the show by saying that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the shit out of you, and we're going to help you find it here on Horror 101. Well, this time around, we're featuring a movie that scared the shit out of us. It's a Spanish movie. I found it about 5 years ago. Showed it to a couple of friends of mine. Our good friend Blake the Voice Hellhart couldn't sleep for days after watching it. This movie made the cult sensation Nick McPherson fly off the couch and scream like a little girl. This is the epitome of terror. No! Do I have your attention yet? You think you're ready for this? Tonight I'm joined by four guests. It's the usual cohorts, the cult sensation Nick McPherson and the world famous Brian Stewart. They hadn't seen the movie before this session. I was privileged to be able to bring in the first two gentlemen that I had ever unleashed this movie onto. It's our good friends, Blake the Voice Hellhart and our local pro wrestler, Irish Bobby Clancy. They agreed to come in and revisit this movie with us. We're gonna open 2013 with a bang. We hope you enjoy REC.
So, okay, on to the topic at hand. REC. As soon as
never
I
seen
heard
it.
REC. REC.
As soon as I heard that Javier Botet was gonna be in Mama, and I'm sure I know why, I figured this would be the perfect time to bring out this movie. REC, and I gotta give props to my friend Mike Hart. He was on the Something Awful forums a few years back, and he's like, have you ever seen REC? I'm like, never heard of it. And he's like, yeah, all these guys are, he's like, it's Spanish, it's subtitled, but everyone on this forum is saying it's the most terrifying thing they've said or they've seen in years. And I'm like, I can't ignore that. Mike Hart usually shoots pretty straight. He doesn't fuck around.
Often.
Yeah, so I'm like, all right. So I grabbed it, and I watched it by myself in this basement with all the lights off when Nude was up in Toronto training. And let me tell you, 100 minutes later, I had a hard time walking through this dark-ass house to get upstairs to bed by myself. And all of a sudden, I felt like I was 5 years old again.
Keeping in mind that this house is scary to begin with.
It's old. It's creaky. A lot of wood, a lot of creaking and stuff like that. When the furnace kicks on, you think something's coming through the wall at you.
You know, the first time I came to your house, and you had the gargoyles perched up front, the vampire in the backyard, and you walk inside, and it's this old wooden house, and it feels like the kind of place where, you know, you can expect to go back through old newspaper headings and see, like, Murder House in Windsor, you know. And I thought, this is that house.
I'm not afraid to admit it. I live in a creepy house.
Well, we did a lot of, we met here a lot. With the paranormal investigations that we did. Mm-hmm. And I remember numerous times going up to the bathroom by myself and being, like, hyper aware of the noises around me and stuff. And just the atmosphere kind of always would get me by myself. Everyone else was in the basement, and I'd go up to, and I'd just be like, oh, God.
The archway to the living room.
It's, then you're walking towards the bathroom.
It's a creepy
house.
There's
light from behind you, but there's no light coming from the front. So you just see this dark archway and you just kind of like this.
It is. It's a creepy house. And it's an old house.
Yes.
What's worse than that is, okay, you got that archway, but you turn right to go into that little hallway that leads to
the corner.
Well, to the right there, you got that bedroom to the right. Yeah. And if that door is open, all you see is, like you said, pitch black. You can't see in there. So you have to cross that threshold to get to the bathroom.
And it always feels like there's somebody in there watching.
Yeah, it
does.
It's a claustrophobic bathroom. Like, it's a small, weird-shaped bathroom with a weird little cubby where the toilet goes and stuff.
And speaking of your bathroom, I was up there doing my business, and the door was opening. I'm going, no.
It's the cat.
It's Tank coming in, and he's rubbing his shit as he's coming in. So anyway, sorry. Yeah, that is that one room there. I felt it a few times, and I think I've said it to both of you. It just feels really fucking creepy right there.
And the only way I was going to talk these guys into joining me in my creepy house to watch this movie that I had painted up all week as the scariest thing you're ever going to see was to agree to have them all over on this nice, fluffy, bright, safe Sunday morning.
Bearing in mind, this is a Sunday morning. And everybody met early for breakfast.
Yeah, I'm fresh off a midnight shift. Yeah. Do it again tonight.
I'm fresh off a night of drinking. So.
As is Andrew.
Probably lost on church. But, I mean, this is when we used to watch horror films was Sunday afternoons. Sunday afternoons on Channel 20 used to be the horror double features.
Thriller
and
double
features. So this like kind of brings me back in a way.
So can you put make sure that when you edit children this together, you put in some Led
it's
Zeppelin?
The first one I ever saw.
Oh, yeah. Kind of like Thriller?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You got to have for the thriller double feature reference.
That was on Saturday afternoon, so that was 1 to 5 Saturday afternoon.
It was, and it was literally one of the great parts of growing up in this area. Yeah. Channel 20 was one of the greatest television stations in the entire United States based on the things we got here that no one got anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Things like Robotech.
Yes.
Johnny Sacco.
Ultraman. Yeah.
And growing up in Canada, right across the river from that, we lucked out huge.
Now, this is found footage, right? This is done through the kit live of a news camera or something?
Yes,
or?
Yes. It's
and it's done well.
It's in that vein, but yes, it's shot by a professional cameraman in the setting of it's they're filming a TV show.
The one thing I want to look for in this, then, and this is what bothers me about found footage. First found footage film I ever saw, of course, was Blair Witch, and it blew me away. Now, that one haunted me. That ending scared the shit out of me. It disturbed me.
Well, keep in mind,
I find that bizarre because I found the ending to be the worst part of the movie.
See him standing in the corner, and that's a
scream. And then all of a sudden, the scream is severed, and the camera goes down,
and that's it.
You're like, what the fuck just happened? And you're given nothing, and you're sent out that way. Okay, thanks for coming.
Blair Witch also benefited a lot from the lack of internet at that point in time. Because it wasn't what it is now.
It was word of mouth. It was word of mouth.
Yeah, and if you went to go see it on the first day, buying into the hype machine, because at that point in time it never came out that this whole thing was fake, you know, if you bought into the publicity, it freaked the shit out of you.
Yeah.
But it has absolutely no repeat value. Because after you watched it, and after you find out about it, you watch it again, and it's just, eh.
The one thing I can say about REC is, as you watch the movie, you forget that it's a movie, because it's so genuine. You buy all the dialogue, like, the things that people say, and how they react, and how things go on. It seems like it's real. It was written so genuine.
It keeps your heart racing for sure.
And a single camera setup has become an art form, right?
Well, here's the problem I have with it. This is why, I mean, at the time, Blair Witch was 5 weeks, I'd never seen anything like it before, and it was new and it was gimmicky, and I was like, well, this is neat. But when you go to that single camera perspective, you really lose a lot of the cinematic grammar that you would typically have to convey information to the audience.
Certainly, but I'll put to you that in the years since Blair Witch, we have moved forward with this single camera setup and its art form and variations on the theme, like Paranormal Activity,
etc. But you're still hamstringing yourself. I mean, you're still stuck in ways in which you can
choosing any genre in film is hamstringing yourself.
Yeah, but if
you're
stuck in one fixed camera for the entire film, you're set in how you can block the film.
I think in a movie like this, though, it works especially in the sense that it gives you the feeling of being there.
Yeah,
you're
the
cameraman.
Right.
And if you were really in a situation like this, you wouldn't catch all the details.
you'd see your perspective on it.
Well, if I was in a situation like this, I'd put the fucking camera down and probably try to defend myself.
Well, I don't know. I mean, professional cameramen who understand the value of a shot are more apt to hold that camera and keep shooting than you or me.
Secret Service agents, you're trying to take a bullet for the news.
That's even discussed. That's even discussed. Even when the shit starts hitting the fan, it's discussed. Like, we've got to film everything. People got to know. Like, it was a campaign to make sure that...
And you'll see why that makes
people
sense.
People had to know what happened.
Now, since the movie is in Spanish, you could view it in an English-dubbed version, but I guarantee you that most of the mania and terror would be lost on the viewer. For that reason, I strongly suggest watching REC with the English subtitles instead. There's no dubbing team in the world that could possibly convey the authentic terror that these actors portray. The performances are so real, one could watch this movie without knowing what was being said and still find themselves on the edge of their seat.
Part of that is that this is my theory and you may find it different, with a subtitled movie, when I'm watching it, it takes that first 5-10 minutes for my brain to start doing the math. Like, I'm reading at first. But then, after about 5 or 10 minutes, my brain's doing the reading.
You're on co-pilot.
Yeah, it's going on its own. I don't have to try.
Right. Yeah, to acclimate to the fact that you have to read and flicker back up at the screen.
And it takes a while before you're not doing that anymore. You're taking it all in.
Screen,
it's all coming in.
I have one warning for this film. Now, I've never seen a trailer for it. I've never seen any footage of this movie. If I see one person pulled screaming into the fucking darkness in a prone position, trying to claw their way, like, for being drugged, I hate that shot.
You don't say.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Where they're face down, and they get pulled into the darkness, screaming. I hate that fucking shot. It's in every goddamn horror film. And if I see it one more time, I flunk this movie.
Okay, this movie was made in 2007.
It's a cliche. So awesome.
It's 6 years old. Awesome.
And you know what? The bulk of what you've seen in regards to that was from the ad of the remake of this movie.
Yes. Okay.
It was the established...
That was some woman looking terrified, so I grabbed my ankle. And they got their fingernails dug into the hardwood floor. They're pulled screaming into the darkness.
It was the money shot of the remake of this movie, and they used it in the ads. Like,
it was used in video games before this. I mean,
but you just allow the movie to be what it is.
It's there. It's there.
I'm not telling you anything, but
said it's there.
Allow the movie to be what it is.
I implied it's there.
So it was time to roll the movie, and REC breaks a lot of cinematic rules to try to get you to forget you're watching a fictional film. There are no opening titles. The movie opens up with a camera trying to focus in on our main character, Angela, played by Manuela Velasco. She and her cameraman Pablo are at a fire station filming a show called While You Were Sleeping, and a lot of the footage is outtakes of her complaining about being bored, asking where she should stand for a shot. It's all very raw and unprofessional, and considerably boring. Each time I've watched this movie with people, they usually spend the first 10 minutes looking at their watch, talking through it, and I'm guessing silently cursing me for wasting their time. But 10 minutes later, when Angela and Pablo accompany two firefighters to an emergency call, their eyes are glued to the screen. REC cleverly catches you off guard, grabs onto you, and drags you into a terrifying claustrophobic survival scenario, and the tension never lets up all the way to a conclusion that has some of the most haunting imagery we've ever seen.
I can't think of a movie that has scared me as much as this one since this movie.
Yep.
Nothing has come close.
Oh, I had the this is a masterpiece of modern
it's
horror.
It's hard to not turn your head away at parts, at least for me it was.
Oh, it is. It sucks you in, because you do. You legitimately care what's going on in this
movie.
It's
like a bad car crash.
Because you are with them, and you want out, too.
Yeah.
Right? No one wants to be locked in a situation like that. That's bad.
Dice que está lleno de policías, que está cortada la calle, y que no le dejan acercarse al edificio, y les doy antibióticos a la silla.
When the body hit the floor, I was like, okay, I can sit through this.
We probably thought the same thing. That was probably the turning point for Mike and I. We were interested. The body hit the floor with that big fucking thud, and we were like...
When that old woman screams, man, it reminds me of an absolute gone-out-of-their-mind crazy person, which it could have easily been that. And then knowing what I know about the series now, and I'm looking back on it now, knowing a little more about the whole... REC as a whole, it gives me a different perspective of it, so I'm looking at it in what I my knowledge of it that I'm not going to spoil for you guys, but it's just like, holy shit.
Did it make you want to body slam people?
Absolutely. Of course. I want to body slam all you guys right now.
I know you do. I can tell.
For sure.
Well, can I make requests?
Okay, I'm playing Atom Bomb.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Clear the tables. For
but
sure.
You see what I mean? Like, all the characters, especially when that shit was going on, they all reacted correct. It was like, it's not... I didn't feel like I was watching actors and actresses. No. It felt like I was watching real people and in an extraordinary situation, and that was really well
done. And that's
done.
That chaos, that shouting, non-determinate lines, just a lot of, like, improv. Like, this is how it would be.
I wonder how much of this was actually scripted, and how much of it was, this is what needs to be said in this scene, give me that.
I bet you that it was a lot of that. It was
probably more of that, right?
My friends are correct about that. The cast of the film was a bunch of unknowns who were selected for their skill at improv. The filmmakers deliberately included actors that weren't popular, again, to trick you into thinking that this was a real scenario. None of the cast was given the full script. They were only handed what the day entailed, so none of them had any idea what was in store for their character until it came time to shoot it. Every trick was pulled out of the bag to give the movie a realistic vibe, including not giving away too many details about what was really going on in the film. You think it's a zombie flick, then it feels more like an infection outbreak. It keeps you guessing all the way through. It's a brilliant production.
So it is smart.
Yeah.
It's a smart movie.
They take certain things into consideration.
And they only left you hanging on things that didn't really matter. Like, yeah. They gave you as much explanation as you required to get through it with a proper sense of belief in what's going on and the logic of it, you know, because that's probably how it would happen. You know, they would determine something's going on, they lock an area down, seal a bunch of people in, fuck them, right? Like, that's how our government works. They don't look at things in human terms.
I also wouldn't call these zombies, because they have, there's a, again, maybe it's more like 28 Days Later, it's an infection movie.
28 Days Later zombies.
What makes these
modern,
worse,
fast zombies.
Zombies have that kind of single, mindless devotion to one task. They'll keep at it and at it
eating.
And at it over and over again.
And then they would leave
until
the door.
They stop. But this, they would sporadically just leave and go somewhere else. Almost like a demonic cat. Oh, I have to be in the other room now. Hold on. Phew. And they'd leave. And you're like, well, what the fuck are they doing?
Would there be some other motivator, a mover for these things, like, to go off and entertain themselves in some way? We don't know.
Well, if their imperative is to spread it, when they run into an obstacle like that, it just seemed like they would just look around to try and find more victims.
Sure. As opposed to hanging at the door.
Yeah.
Waiting.
They're looking for a way out. They're like velociraptors. They're testing the offenses systematically. They remember.
Señora.
It had everything that a horror film should have. I liked it. And one of my major fears, as I said earlier, was that the limitations of blocking, especially when you're fixed to one camera and you can't cut. They use it really well. My favorite scene for that is when they're on the hallway after they had just shot the old lady.
And she's
standing in the way of the camera. And the way she keeps leaning into shot, she keeps blocking the dead body slumped behind her.
Yeah, and you're waiting.
I mean, keep expecting for that to, like, move or start to get up.
That actually,
and, like, I remember feeling myself like I'm craning my own neck, and I'm like, what am I doing? I can't push her out of the way. It's a fucking movie.
Well, that actually took a lot of restraint on the part of the filmmaker, because, most American horror movies, they don't have that kind of patience. They're going to go for the cheap scare.
Yeah.
But you know what else, too? Because she doesn't move and nothing happens in that scene, the next time we come back and the body's gone, it doesn't bother us for some reason. It doesn't sink in. Because, like, well, that threat's neutralized.
Right.
It's done. And then when she jumps back at the end, that really, that throws us.
He fucking takes a hammer to the face.
Well, you know what? And this I love, too. At the start of the film, you've got the storyteller is this frail, tiny anchor woman, right? Tiny little female character. And even to play that up, they have her try to put on the fireman outfit to show how much smaller she is. And at the start of the film, you feel really safe. You're surrounded by these big, huge firemen and police officers. And you think, this is nice. But one by one, all of these bodyguards, your protectors for your storyteller, are being knocked off one at a time. And worse, they're becoming the enemy. And so all that's left is this poor, frail little anchor woman.
But they play her off as pretty tough throughout. Like, she's always getting in people's faces.
Feisty.
True.
She's very, very, very spirited. Which, it's like Newt.
Yeah.
She may be small,
but she's fierce.
There you go. And we never get a good view of Pablo.
You never see
Pablo. You see
Pablo.
His legs and
that's
feet,
it.
But that's pretty
you
much
never
it.
See Pablo.
The most you see of him is when he hands the camera off to her to climb up on that thing to videotape in on them doing the work
you
on
see
the
his
zombie.
Back for a bit.
Yeah, you see his body. But you don't know how big of a dude he is or how, you know, he's you. Pablo is you.
Now I know what you're thinking. Thank God there's no creepy children in this movie, eh? Yeah, about that.
I appreciate how after the fit hits the shan,
exactly,
and the doctor's forced to disclose what he knows, and he's telling the tale, right? Mm. Well, we got this dog, and it went into a coma, and then it came to, and it was overly aggressive, and we had to tranquilize it, this, that, and the other thing. And all of a sudden, she was the dog's name, Max, and like, yes, and everybody just
turns,
looks at her like, oh fuck,
and they're all looking at the little girl, yeah,
and even the mother's like, she doesn't believe what she's saying.
It's
she's
tonsillitis.
Like, she just has tonsillitis. Like, even she knows that there's a danger, but she still, yeah, she doesn't want to admit that her child might be the catalyst to this, whatever it is. It's just tonsillitis, eh? It's like, why don't you just give that child over?
She, when her mom was holding her right before she bit her mom, mm-hmm, or attacked her mom's face, she looked normal, like a sick child.
Like the little cuts on the
lips. Yeah, just like a sick child. And then literally 5 minutes later, they bump into her upstairs and her skin's like scaly.
Big thing on the forehead. She'd been
scorched or something.
Yeah, like something had happened.
She had accelerated.
Yeah.
Accelerated.
Well, she was such a slow burn too, but you knew it was coming because like she's sitting there saying, it's just tonsillitis, but then you see the girl's face just slowly turn.
I've never seen anyone with tonsillitis look like that.
The eyes looked incredible on that kid though, man, the makeup.
And that's what gives you the shock.
Well, yeah, and like I said, the patience in this, because it, we've kind of become kind of tuned to the typical timing of horror movies, because usually, like, you know, pause within so many seconds, this is going to happen.
Bang.
And with the cop, when he's going towards a little girl, like even with like the old woman at the beginning, most other filmmakers in this kind of genre would not have had the amount of patience to drag it out as long as they do. Like the little girl, he turns away from her like 3 or 4 times.
And every time you're going,
and you're like, he's going to go, go now. He's going to go now. And then because the pacing is so off from what we're used to, when she finally does go after the guy,
you're like, ah!
It's still I'm just like,
you're something pretty good.
I know it's coming, awesome. But my timing is off. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm just like, fuck! And the screams, because like, at first, do you notice that the sound that they made actually evolved throughout the movie?
Yeah.
In the beginning, it just sounded like the old lady just sounded like an old lady screaming.
But it became very animal-like.
And then eventually, like as more people got infected, the noises, like when their eyes got all screwed up, like that little girl, the noises she was making.
Less of a scream,
No human being should be able to make that sound. Like that's just freaky as shit.
Yeah, or they're pounding on the door.
Oh, sounded. Yeah.
You ever been woken up in the middle of the night by one of your cats screaming, like, screeching at another cat that they've seen outside? Where's that a high pitch? Oh, my God. It paralyzes you.
Cats make some pretty horrifying noises at night.
Yeah, they do.
Little bastards.
If you're any kind of horror fan, you've had this conversation with your friends before. You watch a movie like this, and then you enjoy discussing how you would react to the situation. Put yourself in the scenario and play out your strategy. How would you try to survive this movie?
And this is what most of us, I think, would have done. In this situation, we would have found one abandoned apartment, barricaded the shit out of it,
absolutely,
and just held out.
Yep.
And that's a no-brainer. And you know what would have happened in those cases? Eventually, they would have firebombed the building. We would have been incinerated to death, but it probably been a better way to go.
And being bit or whatever.
Well, and you know, it's...
Archie, you bust a hole through a wall.
We've all seen enough zombie movies as well, that the moment shit like that started to happen, and you could put two and two together to say, okay, these people are biting these people are becoming active because of the bite, everyone's dying. There's not handcuffing people to shit, not whatever. No. I'm talking obliterating their heads with a large object till there's no fucking way that they're getting back up.
Yeah.
No way. I mean, a headless body trying to bite me, not worried about it. At all. That I can do, but that's the thing, eh? And they touched on this in A Robot Chicken as we keep coming back to it, where the one guy's talking about how, oh shit, it's getting late. And it's a full moon, and they're all joking about how he's going to turn into a werewolf, and the one chick pulls out a gun and just fucking wastes him. Like, dude, we were kidding. Oh, okay, well, whatever, you know?
Going back to what Brian was saying, how all the protectors are kind of stripped away from the main character. I remember when I first watched this, and keep in mind, I watched this, I had no idea what this movie was about. When I sat down here in the dark by myself and watched this movie, I was scarred 75 minutes later. But I do remember, and every time I watch the movie, I feel this way, the last of protection was Manu.
And he was like,
man, was there 100%. I mean, if Manu wasn't there, there were several times during that movie, if Manu wasn't there, it had been over for them.
For everybody.
Yeah. So at the end, when they come out after getting
and
the
And he looks up.
And the camera pans, you see him, and he looks up, and he's infected. You're like, oh, fuck.
It's over. Yeah.
It's over. Yeah. That your last piece of shield is now
he
up
punches
against
a zombie. Have you ever seen somebody dare to punch a zombie
right
in the
mouth
and then breaks his neck? I mean, like, that takes a lot of upper body strength to be able to break somebody's neck like that. That's not easy.
Before that firefighter got infected, that guy must have been an MMA fighter on his days off, because that guy did not stop. He kicked every zombie's ass until he got picked up.
But again, he was scared. You know,
the whole time.
He wasn't John McClane.
No.
You know what I mean?
Doing what he had to do.
Yeah, exactly.
You could tell it was the adrenaline. He was the guy forced into the position that he was and just happened to be trained well enough and mentally strong enough to actually pull it off.
His fight or flight was oriented more towards fight than flight.
Yeah. Well, his first instinct was to come out
swinging.
Bearing
in mind
that
there was really nowhere to flight to.
But everybody else ran. You know, like, when the shit hit the fan, most people were like, run, get the fuck out of here! And he was always the last one to follow. He always stood
there as a barricade. Well, you want your first responders to be that kind of person. Yeah. You don't want your firefighters or your cops to be the first ones to go, fuck this! Like, the agent that they sent in.
Well, there's a big difference between, being trained and being a professional firefighter and going into a situation that you understand and dealing with fucking zombies.
So Manu is gone. The lights in the building have been cut. It's just Angela, her trusty Pablo, and the light on the camera to help guide them through the darkness. Looking down the stairwell, they see a whirlwind of creatures snarling, screaming, clutching as they fly up the winding staircase for them. There's only one last refuge in the building, the penthouse on the fourth floor. And their last salvation turns out to be a fucking layer of madness.
I remember when they finally get into that, and that's a manic part enough, because you're seeing all these zombies coming up the stairs, running, just screaming after them. They make it through the threshold just in time to slam the door in that one cop's face. And you hear him boom, 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 screaming, trying to get in. And you're like, oh good, they're safe. But as soon as the light comes on and you're looking at the environment, you're like, where the fuck are we?
This isn't good.
Whoever lived here was insane. You know what I mean?
There's almost like there's like medical implements and shit all over the place. You know, by the environment, nothing good's happened in this unit.
No.
This is a place where more bad stuff has happened. In fact, this is the genesis of the bad stuff.
Creo que todo ha sido un error terrible. Debo seguir procedimientos escrupulosamente. El ritual es muy específico.
I like how when she's playing the tape, and she's like, what the fuck's he talking about? And then she starts wandering away, and you can still hear the tape behind her going, the ritual to get rid of this girl is very specific. I gotta do
that
this.
That happens a lot of horror films, too. The telling of the tale, right?
That's very Evil Dead.
Necronomicon Ex Mortis.
For reasons I won't disclose, since I don't want to give the full movie away, the light on the camera is busted while they are in this lair, and it forces Pablo to activate the night vision on the camera. At this moment, the last two survivors are all but blind, but the night vision reveals that they are not alone. There's something in there with them, and this is the part that will remain with you, the viewer, for a long, long time.
The last 5 minutes of this film, even now watching it, and I've seen it numerous times, like I've probably seen the last 5 minutes a dozen times, it has the same effect on me as it did the first time. My teeth are clenched. I'm like, you know, I'm folding in on myself to get away from this fucking thing, because that's the thing I least want to see in the world, I think. I mean, I would rather, I think, be confronted with a tiger or something, or a bear, because at least it's furry and nice to a degree. You know, whereas this thing, there is no redeeming quality to it. It's a horrifying thing. It's the thing you don't want to see. The face is all fucking distorted. You know, the shape of the body is so wrong you know, the weird saggy tits on it and the fucking shitty underwear and the whole thing. It's like the total package of it. You
know, and it's like, got like this big maw of a mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like draped open.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a horrifying like the jowls and the gooiness of it. And the, it's completely unappetizing on about every possible level. Yeah. And it's hard to get that out of your mind. It's indelibly etched. Now that you've seen it, you can't unsee it.
The terrifying specter of Nina Medeiros is something to behold.
How did you feel when the camera looked down the hallway and you just saw a shape and then it moved and you're like, what the fuck is that?
And that shape ain't right. It's a bad shape.
You're like, what is that?
Your mind has a certain understanding of the shape of people.
It actually looks
and that falls outside that.
Well, it almost moved like a marionette.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, for me, it looked an awful lot like how we personify aliens to look. Very long, thin bone structure.
Yeah, yeah.
So it doesn't look quite human.
The makers of this film brilliantly cast this Spanish actor named Javier Botet, who has this unique body type. Exceptionally tall and unbelievably thin with real long arms. After 4 hours in the makeup chair, they transformed Javier into one of the most terrifying characters we've ever laid our eyes on. And he single-handedly gave a bunch of us veteran horror fans genuine nightmares.
They picked the perfect woman to give that.
That's
Javier Botet. Oh,
that's excellent makeup then.
He's got a congenital disorder.
He's got that bony musculature that looks so unnatural, but it works. It's not, and it's real.
Well, he's like what, 7 foot tall, 95 pounds, something like that. Really, like he's just built weird, and you couldn't do that as well with CG, because you would see that it's CG, whereas that is a real thing that's a bad shape that your mind goes, that's not a person, people aren't shaped like
that. For me, that's the ultimate nightmare. You're trapped in somewhere, it's pitch dark.
You can't see any of it.
And there's a fucking man-eating zombie slash, maybe some, they're hinting towards possession, right?
Well, so what hammer, is it really? The is hammer it a zombie adds or what is a whole it? New element to it.
It's armed.
That hammer.
It's armed.
That's nuts.
And like, that horrible noise that makes, that shrieking.
I know what fucked Blake up when he first saw it. When they're trying to make it...
The saggy tits.
It knows that it is
that,
there.
That really disturbed me.
It knows that they're there. They're trying to get away. And he pans back. And just in sheer blind frustration, the thing is just taking the hammer and just smashing whatever's in front of it. And it's just like, ow, you're like, I gotta get the
fuck
away from
that. And it's only a second or a second and a half of footage where it's beating on the fucking like walls and cabinets and just... anger and frustration, and that is...
It's the Billy scene. It's the Billy scene all over
it's
again.
It's fucking so disturbing.
So?
It was fun. I enjoyed it.
Scary?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It was a roller coaster.
That is a scary film, man. Yeah. I don't care who you are. You just get sucked into the mania of that movie. Yeah. You know, it ropes you in, and your heart's pounding, and it's just...
It really translates the chaos well.
Yes. So, you guys want to score this one? Nick, go first. Score it.
Me? Oh, honestly, I would say it's probably one of the better ones I've ever seen, so I'm going to go high. I'm going to go 9.5.
9.5.
How much is 9.5? My only concern is that repeat viewings, a lot of the things that I had a lot of fun being scared by, the initial jolt, may not be there. Those long hallway scenes will always be frightening, but a few of the jolt moments won't be as good as the first time.
Clancy!
I mean, it's been about 3 years since I've seen it, and it was just as thrilling, if not more so. This time around, I mean, it scared the shit out of me. I'd definitely give it a 10 myself.
Blake?
Oh, this is literally one of the top horror movies I've ever seen. It's one of the few movies that's actually stuck with me and still horrifies me. And like Mike said, even having not seen it for a year or two, watching it again is every bit as terrifying as it was the first time. So I'd be hard-pressed to think of another movie I could give a higher score to, so I'll give it a solid 10 as well, man. I mean, there's nothing about it that I don't like. There's no element of it that is not at a high end of understanding. Like, it's all... These are people who clearly love the genres they're using, people who clearly didn't want to damage this movie in any way, and they wanted to make it as believable and as horrifying as they could. And they succeeded on every level with it. Absolutely.
The gore is good. The sound is good. The pacing is good. They purposely take you off your guard by giving you these outtakes of this girl doing her show and everybody is happy.
I don't know, like, if we mentioned even, how hot she was.
Like, you, even at the beginning, she goes into a room that's just filled with firefighters. Like, filled with firefighters. There's 20 firefighters there. They're all laughing. They're all joking. They're all having a good time. And you're like, okay, nothing bad can happen now. Stark contrast to 70 minutes later, where all of a sudden you've become enclosed and tighter and tighter and tighter until you're trapped in this lair in the dark, blind as a bat with these people, and you're still wondering what the fuck is going on.
Well, and you're with them the whole time, and that's the, I think, the beauty of the film is that it conveys that sense. You feel what they're feeling. You're with them. You are Pablo. You are the cameraman.
Well, I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. I knew you would. You know, I knew you would.
And it's a great movie, man.
It's gonna, I think it's going to be an excellent show.
Well, there it is. Our first show of 2013 featuring REC. If you haven't seen it yet, I'm hoping by now you're running to get it. Big thanks to Jaume Balaguero and Paco Plaza for writing and directing a haunting little horror movie that will certainly remain as one of our favorites. Thanks also to Javier Botet for scaring the fuck out of us as Nina Medeiros. Oh, and by the way, you want more good news? REC 2 is just as manic. It's a direct sequel to the first movie, and it uses all the elements that we loved about the first one to deliver more scares. The third REC is called Genesis, and it's much different than its predecessor. I personally didn't appreciate the direction it took, but a fourth installment called Apocalypse is currently being made, and we cannot wait for its release. We hope you enjoyed this show. It was fun making it. We've got a great lineup of films to discuss this year. And for all of us here at Horror 101, this is Cash Wampum saying there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the shit out of you. And this time around, it's definitely REC. We hope you'll join us next time for Horror 101, where we're educating your fears.